Okay, do you want to test this on? No. Let's have a... N2, test, test. Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2. Working.
Yeah, you will speak a little bit louder, I guess.
Louder.
Fortsatt en 4 minutter igjen, så ingen grunn til å slutte å prate.
So will you put this link on your website? Can you get John to put it on his website?
I think so, might be a good idea. Depending on the outcome. Yeah.
If you can get him to put it there, you know, just above. Because the last time you have is about October, actually, the last time.
Yeah. Good idea.
I just give you a short introduction, very briefly.
Hello everybody. It's nice to see so many people in the auditorium also towards the very end of the semester. At least I know that some of my students have been pulling all-nighters in order to meet the delivery deadline 15 minutes ago. And I'm glad you stay with us for the last NIST lecture of the season. And for this occasion, I'm very pleased to introduce to you Mr. Ulf Feger from Huawei, the cybersecurity officer of numerous countries in Europe, including Norway. I guess you'll make the list yourself afterwards, who will give us a talk on how to make cybersecurity a part of a company's DNA. As always, we're also very happy to have the folks following us online, so the session will be streamed and recorded as previously, and for those online, they can send me an email and I'll try to pass on any question that might arise also from that side. So, on that, Ulf, please.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation and the possibility to speak to you. Yes, as was mentioned before, I'm the cybersecurity officer for Germany and some other countries within Europe. So what is the duty of a cybersecurity officer? So we have a cybersecurity strategy, a worldwide strategy, and we have worldwide 7 CSOs, country-specific or cross-country-specific, who are in charge of implementing that cybersecurity strategy within these countries. So you have some kind of responsibility, and it's a huge task to implement cybersecurity. A huge task means you're working for a huge company with a lot of brilliant hats and brilliant minds, and now you have to follow that strategy and implement it somehow. And what I'm going to show you is a rough or coarse granular overview how such a strategy could look like, at least how it looks for Huawei. So just to say it up front, some kind of Christmas presents, let me call it that way, it's an overview. Huawei cybersecurity white paper, that is that thing I'm going to talk today about, and some other stuff, because I think you are in the right place at the right time. So if you have something in future to do with security, cybersecurity, you will have a brilliant future, no doubt, because there's a need of brilliant people who take care of these topics, and you will see some of these topics in that slide deck. You can get at that, of course, later on. So cybersecurity is a wide and broad range of different topics. It's not about, it's not only about technology, it's about processes. So it's about standards. How do you interact? How do you implement standards within processes? How do you adapt technology? And. So it's a wide range, and I'm sure you'll find something for your future in there. So to give you an impression of what I'm talking about, I thought about it might be a good idea to tell you something about the company I'm working for. So it's Huawei, a Chinese company, an ICT company. So it's a supplier to the ICT industry. And it's not a small company, definitely not. You see it, 150,000 employees worldwide. At least in Germany, we are about 1,800. I think here in Norway, it's about 300. And we are growing, we are rapidly growing. So we have 70,000 people in R&D. Most of the R&D is currently in China, but we are also setting up R&D centers in Europe. I will talk about that later on. So we're talking about $35 billion revenue. That's a huge amount of money. So some other numbers you can later on read. For me, very important is we have 16 R&D centers worldwide at 20 and joint venture innovation centers who are really leading in technology invention. So that's a huge amount of money we spend on research, and maybe you can be part of it sooner or later. So that also means we have 150, or we participate in 150 standards organizations, and we have submitted over 5,000 proposals to them. So a huge number. Some other numbers. The most important one to me now is on the left-hand side at the bottom, two R&D centers within and with 14 R&D sites in Europe. So we are currently setting up a new enterprise research center with a focus on security in Munich. So we are almost, I think it's the number is about 50 people we wanted to employ there. So we have 50 slots there. That's a huge number. But the challenge is to find 50 experts. So there's a demand on that market. You can be part of that market. You can have a brilliant future there. Let me skip the other numbers. You will see that again and again. As a Chinese company, we didn't reinvent the wheel. So we had a lot of other companies who helped us, who supported us, like IBM, IBM Consulting. So that's my previous employer, is IBM. We work with Hay Group, Accenture, PwC, FHG, so the Fraunhofer Group for research topics. So you see, we all already have there a lot of connections to other companies, worldwide known companies. Thus, that also helps us to improve our processes, our technology. Very specific, I think, to a Chinese company is we have shares. And only as a Chinese employee, you can get these shares. So it's a privately held company. You can't buy these shares on the market. But that forces, or that brings the Chinese colleagues to bring forward our company. That's the basic idea behind that. So you see here we have more than 74,000 shareholding employees. So they own the company. So they know why they are working hard, because it's their company. So that's basically a short overview of Huawei, the company. And coming back to the original topic we want to talk about is so the end-to-end assurance. So security is part of the company's DNA. The idea behind that is we don't want to bolt on security later on. So you check a car at the end of the production line and then you find out, oh, there's a weakness. No. Our idea is, and that's the way how we handle it, we build security into the manufacturing process, into the developing process, into the analysis process. In all these certain steps of a process, you find security. And I think that will sooner or later be part, everybody has to adopt that. Because it's the only way you're able to handle security. Let me get more specific. So nowadays you're used to use communication technology. You see some laptops here. Usually you see iPads, iPhones, Huawei pads, all that stuff. So you're talking, you're communicating the whole day long. No way around that. You're used to do that even more than I do. So we have billions of people, billions of devices. And where's the security? So we had a lot of security leakages in the recent days, months, years. And we have to work on that, to minimize that, to mitigate the risk of leakages. We definitely have to work on that. But where do you start working on that? If you have the final product, then it's too late. So here's some examples, traffic communication. So a lot of car companies, car producers are working on car communication and also the security topics. Auto metering, or smart meters for the electricity supply. So think about hacking such a smart meter. And our energy network works fine in some kind of balanced. So you have the suppliers and you have the consumers. Now think of switching off the consumers and you still have the suppliers, so you overload the network. So that will definitely damage our energy supply network. Or you have the, you don't have enough suppliers and you have more consumers, so you also don't have the balance there. So there's a huge risk in that. So if you now switch off the smart meters worldwide or for a country, so you get in an imbalanced state, that also is some kind of security, definitely. And you know all the other topics here, remote monitoring, vending, electronic consumer products, etc. All that has to do with some kind of security, cybersecurity. So let me skip that. These are some examples I already mentioned. One of the last intro slides here that sources Microsoft and Secunia is the motivation of the hackers and their expertise. Means you have the script kiddies, you have the hobbyists, and they have the experts, and where's their personal gain? In recent times, or in the past, it was, okay, I just want to be part of the community, and I want to be the hero of that community. That's it. Fine, thanks, done. But what's growing much quicker now is on the top right. So you have experts, and their personal gain is money. It's all about money. And you can make a hell of money in that area. Okay, it's illegal, unfortunately. So what I was missing here in that chart, I added a third dimension, is the targeted audience. So to give it some kind of three-dimensional feeling, so you have the general public that can be attacked. That is often done by script kiddies. So switch on your laptop and put it onto the public internet without a firewall. I say thank you. I would give you between 10, maximum 15 seconds, and the laptop is not owned by you anymore. Maximum. So specific group could be a company. Open the firewall of a company, and I would say thank you for the data. So you can forget data privacy immediately. At Sun, I worked for Sun Microsystems. We established or implemented portals. So just to get an idea how quick the hackers are, we switched off the firewall for that protected that portal. It took roughly about 11 seconds, and we were attacked. And now the dedicated entity. That's definitely the interesting part, the most interesting part. So you have the experts who attack dedicated persons. That might be a politician, that might be someone from government, that might be someone from a business department. So I try to get hold of data as much as possible of that specific person. I look at Facebook, I look at Google, I do whatever kind of research to get as most data as possible. So sometimes you see on business cards, on the back side, you see a picture of that person, wonderful, and the private address. Wonderful. So I know where that person lives, so I can do some espionage on that person, the first entry. And I dig deeper and deeper and deeper into that person or the personal data, and then I'll start attacking that person. Will be a big success. So in cybersecurity, of course, we are also fighting that. But we are also fighting definitely something else. As a Chinese company, we are fighting against prejudices. So I used to work for IBM a long time in the security systems division, it was called. So I did executive consulting, security consulting. And that's one of the sources here. It's the IBM Internet Security Systems Research. So IBM does security research. That stuff is downloadable for everybody. I inserted the link here. And you can see the top botnet command and control center server hosting countries. And usually, I would say I expect China to be the red one on the top or the blue one. But China is the dark green one, 6.1%. And I'm sure nobody of you have expected that. Second and last example, top malware hosting countries. China could be the blue one. No, it is not. It's not the red one. It's again the green one, the light green one. So 5.9%. I'm sure nobody of you expected that. That's part of the prejudices we face day by day working. That's also part of the cybersecurity. So all this comes together, and we focused on a white paper. We thought about a white paper. We published a white paper a year ago. That was white paper, let me call it version 1.0. And we were asked to improve that, asked for more details. And so we thought about and worked on a second version. And basically, it's that one. That one is printed on paper, this one, and you find it here. And so if you're interested in that stuff, please take one after the session. And if you have any questions, you're highly welcome. So we thought about, okay, we have such a huge amount of security topics. How do we put them into our organization? Where do we put them? So we thought about, it might be an ideal idea to put that as part of our DNA, of our basic structures, into our business processes. So I can speak about ISO 27001 or the upcoming ISO 27036 or about some other standards. But how do you live them? How do you implement them? And where's the benefit? Because there has to be a benefit for us. There has to be a benefit for the customers. There has to be a benefit for the business. And people have to be aware that there's a benefit because they have to lift the security. So that gives you a rough overview of security processes and where we have them from or who worked on them. I mentioned the companies before, IBM, FAG, HA Group, etc., Accenture. So the basic idea is to have something like a closed-loop systems. We get the requirements from the customers, fine. We work on these. We might produce a product. We want to sell that product, and we get the feedback from the customers. Product is fine, product is not fine. Otherwise, we can't sell it. So, but where is their security? So security is in every step of these coarse granular displayed here activities or processes. So you could dig now in every box in here and spend weeks. We have still some minutes. So the white paper is exactly about that. So we show here 12 sections which follow the Huawei's core processes. Where do we include here security, and how do we include it? So now it's more about, I said it before, processes, not about technology. For some people, that's boring. For some others, it's exactly that what they want to work on. So strategy, governance, and control could be something like GRC. That's definitely part of that. So governance, risk management, control. That means you need a structure. That means you need people who are in charge of the governance, who are in charge of taking the risk, who are in charge of controlling something. Otherwise, it's worthless. So you need to establish a system where the management is aware of security and what security means to the company, to the organization. And then you break it down. In this case, you see here our CEO, Mr. Ren Shengfei, and underneath we have our global cybersecurity officer, John Suffolk, and he reports to Ken Hu. So, and underneath that, you have exactly that structure I talked at the beginning about. So you have the country cybersecurity officers who are then in charge of implementing the security strategy within the countries. And you see here, we have one in Japan, one in Australia, one in Germany, one in India, one in France, one in UK, one in the US. So at least we have covered some areas. I do cover currently Austria, Germany, Sweden, Norway, Russia, and one or two other countries. So it's a hell of work to do, but it makes fun. It makes definitely fun. So, but you see, we have here some kind of organization and we are in charge of something, and that something means security. So we do need to implement that. So standards and processes. There are a lot of standards out there. So what we are fighting for currently is to have a, for example, European-wide or worldwide security standard. There's so many standards in each country, but there's not one standard that is valid for all the countries. That's again a process thing and a standard thing, because we have to work together on that standard. Laws and regulation. That was one of the reasons for the intro slides. We work in 140 countries. So we have 140 times local laws and regulations. And of course we do follow these laws and regulations. 140 times at least. You can assume that's a huge amount of work. So we have a lot of lawyers employed. Human resources, one of the topics I do like. So human resources, yes, we do have a vetting process. We do need a vetting process because we do need brilliant brains, brilliant people, and we want to be sure that, yeah, if they prevent to be brilliant, they are more or less brilliant. At the same time, yes, you have to work together with the people. So you have to improve their knowledge, you have to motivate them. How do you do that? And in respect to security, you have to increase security awareness. So that's now an example. I know it's in German, sorry. I'm sure you can read it, thank you. So it says Bundespolizei, so more or less police. And that's a private example. But you can figure out, very often, such a, let me call it, I don't want to call it virus, it's more malware, you get such a thing into the company. That might happen. It didn't happen at Huawei, but you can be sure it happens every day at I don't know how many companies. What it basically says is, hey, you visit a website, and I'm aware of that website. Hey, and I'm from the police, and you pay now, I don't know how many euro, it says 100 euro, and if you don't pay it within 12 hours, I'm going to crash your data. And that's from the police? Ah. I don't believe that. But what's even more worse here is, that was usually, you can get that surfing around in the internet, but it was placed on a website from an internet shop. And that internet shop wasn't aware that their site was hacked and that piece of malware was inserted there. So if you browse that shop, you get that malware. And it tries to encrypt your local database or your local hard disk. Then, of course, you have to pay. And if you don't pay, okay, that's now in very, very bad German, ihr Browser hat gesperrt, something like your browser locks your computer, you have to pay now, otherwise I'll delete your data. So, okay, it's in bad German, and it's, yeah, unbelievable. Next one and last one, FIFA World Cup. Hey, you are the winner. You won $1 million. And you are selected by whatever gremium, and please reply to this mail, and to get the 1 million, please send us a check of $50, and then you will get the 1 million, and that's a typical game. So what I want to say is, you have to make your employees aware that that is fake. Please don't click on the links. Please don't use that stuff. It's fake. You can't win 1 million that easy. So for that, we have processes to increase employees' awareness. We have to integrate them into HR processes, into the vetting process, and so on and so on. So you see here a coarse granular description of several items like awareness education, critical position identification, so you have to know who in the company has access to what kind of material, who has access to sensitive information. And so on. And of course, at the end, you have some supervisory mechanism, because the management then is in charge of these processes and of the outcome. Again, no technology, it's about processes. Research and development. We do a lot of research. We do a lot of development. So thinking about a new product, we get input from a customer who is requesting a new product. So we are in the concept phase. Usually in recent times, we develop a new product, and after I don't know how many weeks, here it is. Where's the security? We have to think about security. Now we have to attach security. Is that really needed? Yes, it's really needed. Okay, we think about security. See you later. That's the completely wrong approach. So right at the concept phase and the planning phase, where can be what kind of data you deal with? Where has to be security? Then you develop that stuff. You include security. And at the towards the end, with the proving of a quality testing, you also have to test security. Very, very important. So you do not only test the functional the customer required, you also have to do the security testing. Very often that's forgotten. Then you launch the product, and of course you have the normal life cycle of the product. And then it comes to life cycle. What do you have then? You have the product needs to be maybe implemented on customer side. You need support on customer side. You have maintenance. That also includes maybe patching, updates, and we have that. In a production environment. Now think about Telenor or another big customer using ICT equipment. And you do an update or you do a security patch and that fails in a production environment. You can literally see the alarm clocks ringing. So it's sound and feeling at the same time. Believe me. And what's behind that? It's money. So all that comes to risk, risk management, risk mitigation. How do you handle that? Again, we are working here in a production environment. And if such a huge network, for example, goes down, you will lose a hell of money. And you will lose something else, that's reputation. Customer reputation, or your brand reputation, to the customer. So, that will definitely harm your business. So that's all in the life cycle part. Another thing we are working on day by day is the verification. So we call it ABC, means assume nothing, believe no one, check everything. Is that paranoid? It is. Do we have to handle it that way? Yes, we have. So when I joined the company, and everybody, and I said, hey, I'm the new CSO. Everybody said, hey, you are the new CSO? You take care of security? Cool. I get rid of security, you take care of security now. And I said, hey, no, that's it not. You have to take off security too. So it's again of the security part of the security awareness. But that check everything has to become part of your DNA, part of your processes. Because you will see it later on, if you check something, you need to be audible. How do you prove that you checked something? How do you prove that you didn't believe something? Because I'm interested in the result of the audit, because then you come to the closed loop system, because I want to improve something, so I need the output to improve the input. If the requirements of the customers are not detailed enough, for example regarding their security requirements, I have to ask. Third-party supplier management. Again, processes over processes. So we get a lot of our parts from other third-party vendors, from other suppliers. So think about a Chinese or Huawei phone. So to give you some coarse granular numbers, so if you have an Huawei phone, we have about 30% of the parts of that phone are Chinese. 32% are from the US, 10% are from Europe, and the rest is from the rest of the world. Does that look like a Chinese phone? No. It's a phone that is built based on globalization. So you have global components within that phone. Now, for example, now I want to skip that other example. So that is what we are talking about. We're talking at the same time about globalization. So, and that is what we handle, what we have to handle also in the supply chain management. So it's called supply chain management security. Manufacturing, the same. You have to be able to prove who handled what kind of component. Because again, at the end, it comes to this. But I don't want to go into detail here. Issue defect vulnerability management or resolution. So think about a component that has a vulnerability or that has a defect. So the customer has it in use and now wants to return it for change of the equipment. No problem. What do you do with the data of that component that is stored within that component? You might have some data privacy issues. You might have some law issues of that country where that component is used. So we have to make sure that the data within that component got deleted before it is delivered back to China, for example. So that's only one simple example of that procedure. So, and at the end, I mentioned it before, audit, audit, audit. And we have a lot of audit standards, worldwide standards. And, as a global company, we also have to be compliant to these standards. So here's a list of the areas I described, just to give you an idea what we have to take care of as a global company. So, and that's the closed-loop management system I spoke about. So we have the right security standards to use. Again, standards, not homegrown stuff. Then design, build, test with the security in mind. That's sometimes a completely different approach to testing functionality. It means also penetration testing of components. Then sell it right, sell it legally compliant. So, for example, you can't reduce the price as low as you want just to get into the market. So you have to sell it legally compliant. And there's a lot included in there. How do you make an offer? How do you get a request for information or a request for proposal? So you sooner or later, some of you will get into contact with RFI or RFP. So that's a request for information, that's a request for proposal. So customers generate questionnaires, catalogs of questions, and as a supplier you have to answer, reply to these catalogs and give compliant answers and correct answers. Okay, I said that again. Manufacture it with the secure, untampered, and compliant components. Install services. That is that part I talked about. Usually, as a consultant on site, you do what the client wants you to do. So the client has to authorize you exactly to do that. Think about you're working in a highly sensitive production network, and the client simply says, "Ah, do that and that." And the machine falls down. What do you do then? Are you authorized by the client? Can you prove that? Oh, I was working for a bank in the data center of the bank, and we wanted to shut down a server. And we asked an employee of that bank, please shut down the server. And the employee of that bank went to the main switch and simply pushed it. Is that a shutdown procedure? It's a shutdown, but no procedure. So we worked days on recovering the data. Just for simple, please, could you please shut down the server? So, and then of course, at the end, the audit procedure. There are several audit standards, I mentioned that before. So, you see, all that is part of cybersecurity. It's part of security. There are a lot of procedures, processes in there. I'm sure not all of you thought about all these procedures and ideas that are behind that. I haven't talked about cryptology, about SSL, about certificates, about data protection. So there's a lot more behind that. And because I have some more minutes left, what does cybersecurity mean? Cybersecurity, I get often asked, what do you mean with cybersecurity? What is security? And the answer is, to my mind, is it's context related. So that should be the end user, the consumer. Looks more like a happy consumer here, something like that. So the consumer has a device. For example, a tablet with Wi-Fi access. So the consumer wants to use a service, for example, at a bank. Should like look like a Trezor. So here's the money. Here you have the bank, and you have an online service. So that consumer wants to use via Wi-Fi, you might have a router, Wi-Fi router, wants to use that service of the bank. What does that mean? What means security, cybersecurity with that customer? Okay, he wants to make some kind of bank transaction. He wants to be sure that transaction gets handled properly. And at the same time, he wants to make sure that the activity here across the wire is not manipulated. Anyhow, so of course you have in here, in between the ISP or the carrier, who's handling exactly that traffic. It's owned by the ISP. What does cybersecurity mean to the ISP? To the ISP it means, hey, I have to protect in that scenario, for example, that piece here. That has to be handled by the owner. That piece here has to be handled by the bank. So what does cybersecurity mean to the bank? Of course, they want to take care of the transaction. They have to take care of the data here. And you can be sure that bank has some partners. Here, with that partner communication, I think the carrier might be involved. So the ISP carrier cybersecurity context now expands even more, because now you also have that part here. So you have the partner here that partner handles, for example, the data. So you also expand the scenario for that bank, because that bank might be because of data protection laws. So it's handling data protection law related data. Can I really send that data to that partner? I'm allowed to handle that? Am I allowed to do that? So again, fine, you have another partner, but maybe that customer wants to move some money from that bank to that bank. So you have bank A, you have bank B. So basically you have that direction. Again, you have the carrier here. You have the data here involved. So the scenario becomes more and more complicated. So we haven't even talked about Huawei as an ICT provider. So underneath that, now you have Huawei. Why do we have Huawei here? Oh, that's very simple. We have three business groups. The first one, carrier. Second one, enterprise. And the third one, consumer devices. So that is exactly that one. Carrier is exactly that one. Enterprise is exactly that one. You have at least three or four types of different views at cybersecurity. We have to be compliant with every kind of view up here. Of course, we have our own view on cybersecurity. That's exactly the strategy of the white paper I described before. So now we have to fulfill all their views on cybersecurity, on security. And you see, the scenario of security expands again. It really explodes. It explodes for us as Huawei. So we do need processes how to handle this kind of security, the security requirements. Okay, that's it basically. Any questions to this?
Okay, right. Einar Sneknes, I'm a professor here. I teach information security management. Excuse me. Very interesting presentation. So I think you talked very much about what I would call information security management, managing the processes, managing the people. But there is one key element when it comes to security, and that is trust into trustworthy products. And common criteria, one is talking about assurance, okay? Yep. So assurance level, okay? So we might think, or it could be the case that common criteria is dead, okay? So we don't use common criteria, there is not much demand for it. So that's all fine, so I'm not looking for that. But somehow we need to communicate, the vendors will need to communicate that they have a lot of confidence in their product, okay? Exactly. So I know that you have a lot of confidence in your product, okay? Yep. I am on the outside. I don't know all the details, and I'm not probably going to be able to inspect all your factories, get access to all your business secrets or your technological secrets, right? So that's unrealistic. But still, there has to be some kind of communication of trust, right?
Yep.
In the hardware industry, you have, say for a motherboard, there is a warranty scheme, okay?
Yep.
36 months, 60 months, which basically means that if something goes wrong, I will get a product replacement or I will get something else, right? Typically, you know, I'm not particularly bothered about these things because the amounts will be small, okay? Now, consequential damage could be a lot higher, right? The fact that the motherboard breaks could make me lose a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, I want something more than the reliability kind of warranty, okay? When it comes to security, it's even more critical, okay? Being able to communicate the trust or the confidence that you have in the product to me in a way that such that I really understand it, I really believe it. Okay, there are many, say, different ways of doing that. One would be, say, you guarantee that if there is a bug that you haven't disclosed ahead of time, then you will pay me a certain amount of money, right? For example, you know, if or Huawei would right? Huawei would pay me a certain amount of money, right? So if you say that, okay, if there is a security issue with this particular product, we have done everything we can, and we have a big confidence in this, we will pay you $1 million if there is a bug disclosed before we provide you with a patch, okay? So then you can communicate your belief in the product by saying, if something goes wrong, I will pay you this, right? So then the question is for me, okay, if you provide me with a big amount or promise to pay me a big amount, you have convinced me that you really, really believe in it. But if you say, I don't want to give you anything, I might, you know, if something goes wrong, I might give you a product replacement. What does that communicate to me? So have you thought about the idea of looking towards new ways of communicating trust into the market?
Yeah, we did.
Great, right, let me hear.
Yeah. Wonderful. Okay, next question. okay, we also thought about that, how to build trust. It was now a long sequence of it wasn't only one question, it was a sequence of, we do need another 2 hours.
Great,
2 hours. Okay, building trust. Yeah, so building trust, how do you build trust? You have to be open. So one approach is definitely that white paper, we speak how we handle security. I haven't seen any other vendor or supplier who has such an open approach. So that's one answer to that. The other one is, how do you handle, I think that was part of the many questions, how do you handle vulnerabilities? How do you handle security? You can't buy trust. So if I promise you 50 cent or 50 million, I know you would take the 50 million, but does that really establish trust? I don't think so. So there are different kinds of information we offer or we provide to users of our equipment. And at the same time, you will assure that you have to be very careful what you disclose, what kind of information. So of course, we have something like threats. We get aware. So, of course, we communicate threats. Then we might also communicate, and we definitely do that, advisories, security advisories. So we have an organization or part of organization, we call it Product Security Incident Response Team. You'll find that also in the white paper. It's called PCERT. So if we get aware of something you want to publish, or the customer reports something to us, and we have an advisory how to handle that, you will find it here, and you find that on our website. What we have to be very, very careful about is if we find vulnerability. If you find a vulnerability that might harm our customers, so we won't disclose that to the public environment by that, because that could become dangerous for our customers. So depending on that, of course, we inform the customers, because they have to be aware of that. And then, based on that, of course, we work, for example, on a fix, we work on a workaround, or we work on a solution, whatever. But if I say now, this laptop has a vulnerability, and I put that into the public, everybody will try out, oh, I found that too. How can I harm my neighbor? And we definitely have to avoid that. So there's a process behind that, I don't have that slide now with me, but if someone is interested in the peace route, of course, I will provide that information. Does that answer more or less your question?
Okay.
Thank you. The next one. That's again, building trust based on money. I don't know. To be honest, I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know.
Burgess, being a Chinese company is a disadvantage, for example, being an American company in the global market.
That's a question.
Or yeah, in regards to, for example, gaining trust and so forth.
Until I worked for Huawei, I worked only for American companies like Sun Microsystems, VMware, IBM. For me, it was a—I don't want to call it a challenge, but it was something like that—to join a Chinese company. It's a different view, it's a different habit, different culture. So for me, it's something new. I mean, I'm highly interested in the new things. So as a new employee, hey, it's an adventure. Take it, definitely. So for the market. Yes, it might be different, it might be difficult, because there are a lot of prejudices around. I showed you two slides, they definitely the prejudices, we are fighting against them. But so, your colleague said it before, it's all about trust, and we have to build that. That's one of the reasons why I'm here, to show you, hey, we are human beings. Definitely.
Thank you for the speech. My name is Tore Løkken. I'm the CEO of Norwegian Center for Information Security. I have two questions. One is, does Huawei support public awareness campaigns in any country?
Mm-hmm.
And the other is, some countries has banned Huawei into their infrastructure. What kind of information does they base that decision on? And can you comment that a little bit further? Thank you.
Okay, what was the first one?
Awareness campaigns.
Yes, I think we do have awareness campaigns, but I have to relate or link that question to the RPACD, so the Public Affairs and Communication Department, because they are in charge of that. So we are sure can establish a connection to that. I simply don't have all the answers. So the other one is, we got banned from the US, we got banned from Australia. But that means, for example, for the US, it means the carrier business. So we make about, I think it's $5.1 billion with the enterprise business in the US. It seems nobody seems to know that. So it says in the newspaper, Huawei gets banned from the US. I think that's not true. It's simply for the carrier business. Yes, okay, it's big business. But what we are still waiting for something. Is that why do we get banned? There are no facts. It's simply a gut feeling. That's my impression. So we are waiting for evidence. We are waiting for facts. I hear that very often. So there might be a backdoor or something else. To my mind, it's rubbish. So I talked to a company that made research in our routers, okay, it's old versions of our routers, and they state clearly that backdoor thing is definitely exaggerated, massively exaggerated. It's some kind of fear, some kind of prejudices, some kind of, oh, I don't know, some kind of, I don't know what else. So there's still no facts, no evidence that that really happens. I hope that answers at least some question. Any other question?
final question, probably from.
Oh, you want me to? Okay. I can ask a follow-up question, but you know.
Just a question, Stuart.
Okay, yeah, just a short one. Yeah. As an ex-HUA employee, thank you very much for the presentation. But now, as a professor, I would ask a question on the area of software escrow.
Yeah.
This is where that when we were in the United States, we had to deliver our software to a company called Electronic Warfare Associates. Do you see a need for the development of a standard to have something called software escrow standards? And you can maybe explain what software escrow is, but.
Escrow,
yeah. Do you see it as a good solution? Because that was a tough solution, because we had to give our source code to India.
Yeah.
And we had to give it to the United States.
Yeah. I think, yes. For just to give you an idea what software escrow means, huge companies require other huge companies they buy from to store their software outside of the company to assure that if case the supplier gets bankrupt or something else happens to that company, they still have access to the source code. So if you spend millions on hardware, which includes software and software, you want to make sure if your supplier gets bankrupt that you still have access to the source code, because you spend a hell of money of it. So I think yes, there has to be a standard. How it is handled, because that software here, the source code, is very often encrypted. So I give you the code, of course I have no problem with that, but I encrypt it. So encryption means encryption keys. So who does now get the key? Of course I do have a key, but I don't want to give it to my customer.
Trust me.
I trust him, but yeah. So who handles the software escrow management process? Who handles the code? Who handles the encryption? Who handles the keys? And there's much more behind that. So yes, I think there needs to be a standard. That is also something we have to work on. But at the same time, it has to be a worldwide standard so that everybody is able to apply to that standard. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Because if it's a worldwide standard, everybody can say, hey, we are compliant to that standard. And then you don't get to that question, which process are you using? Are you applying to this standard or that standard, etc. So yes, to my mind, it makes sense if it's a worldwide standard. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ulf. Ulf is around for a few more moments before they have to race down to the airport, I assume. There is some Huawei material on the white paper and stuff. It's in front there for those who want to pick it up. And otherwise, there's more coffee left on the can, so grab a coffee and have a chat before you head out and study for your exams. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to Ulf. Thanks to Huawei.
Was a pleasure.
Good luck with your exams. Thank you.
Thank you.